Sahana Vavatu, Sahana Bhunaktu, Sahana Viryankaravahai, Tejasvinavadhitamastamavidvishavahai. Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sarigaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
Okay. Moreover, if the upadis are empirically real and thus limit Brahman, Parichedavad, or if there are the medium of reflection for Brahman, Pratibimbavada, they cannot be abandoned merely by acquiring knowledge of oneness of the jiva and Brahman. Yet, if it is assumed that the influence of that Brahman will be the cause in removing the upadis, then their view agrees with ours. Because, right? In other words, here is that you're dealing with it that you're not taking so much of a party line here. Is that they're Mayavadis, therefore, just whatever they say is bad. Because that will always run into problems. No, what's bad is bad, and what's good is good. So, in there, then here's also another technique, is that what they're saying, you just show which parts are actually our philosophy. You know, also. It's just that you have to give the right angle by which to understand it. You know, like sometimes people say, yes, we're God. And Prabhupada would be, yes, we're all God, but we're small God. Then there's the big God. You know, the origin of all the small gods. So there's so many principles that you can take like that. So then here Jiva Goswami is bringing out this. Yet if it is assumed that the influence of that Brahman would be cause of removing the upadis, then their view agrees with ours, right? Because the point is how is it that if the jiva is Brahman, and then now he's covered by this illusion, you know, whether it's, you count it as real or not, what's the influence that makes him go back to Brahman's the platform? So if that's the influence of Brahman itself, that's what we would agree with. It's only by the grace of Brahman that you are going to come to the Brahman platform. The difference is just how much of Brahman they understand. In other words, the Mayavadis only understand a portion of Brahman. They don't really understand very much about it, even though they're totally absorbed in it. You know, that's the sad part. You know, just like, let's say, somebody who's, you know, very much into something but doesn't have it or doesn't get the benefit from it. You know, someone's working very hard making so much money, but he gets no benefit from the money. So they know something about Brahman. They know it's unlimited, this and that, but then by not understanding the nature of the jiva, because Brahman is what they say, but at the same time is that the jiva is different. And therefore, the interaction of Brahman with jiva is through energies. And so, because they can't tell the jiva is different, then there's no other energies, so therefore Maya can't be there either. You know, just like if Brahman is covered by Maya, therefore you get the illusion of a jiva. But if everything's Brahman, that means Maya also has to be Brahman. So what covered Maya to make that aspect of Brahman then work as illusion, which then makes the jivas an illusion. You know what I'm saying? You know, so if the clay pot is coming from the sky, I mean, is part of this, it would have to be part of the sky to exist. Because if there's no existence, then there is nothing here. Then you don't have to worry about all this. Then the point is if it is a dream and it is a pastime of Brahman, then what's the problem? You know what I'm saying? If you sit down and, you know, you're in your house and no one else is there and you get a little bored, so you start playing some game, it's just, what does it matter that you have to get yourself out of that game? It's just you. You know what I'm saying? So they have great confusion here about that Brahman can have the qualities that they attribute to it and have energy. And so it's because they don't attribute energy. In other words, their definition is narrow. It's their own made-up idea of what Brahman is. It's not that Shastra says that. They've just made it up. This Nirakar, it doesn't say it's Nirakar. It'll say there are no material qualities. But they take it that means no qualities at all. But in describing Brahman, all they're describing is qualities. Because how do you describe Brahman? Say unlimited, that's a quality. Unchanging, that's a quality. Eternal, that's a quality. You know? So they're already understanding Brahman through qualities, because they can relate to qualities. Right? Because qualities are here. So then to say that there's no qualities, but then even having no qualities is a quality. You know, like you say you have a person, he has no good qualities, he has no qualities. It's a nature. Right? So that's the difficulty, is that they're unable to perceive actually what's going on here. But if Brahman has qualities, then the jiva is there and the material energy is there. Then the point is we're supposed to be under the on the spiritual platform, not on the platform of illusion. Then everything makes very sense, and everything in their process of pulling their mind away from material energy and all that is the process of getting liberated. Right? But for us, we don't focus on that because our purpose is to become Krishna conscious. So by becoming Krishna conscious, automatically you don't focus on mind. Is that, yes?
So now, is it the same definition of quality that the personalist use? Is it the same definition of qualities? It is different definition of qualities that they use.
No, they use the same ones that we'll use. Just they won't attribute Shakti to Brahman. Because then they're saying then there's two things. You know? Does that make sense? Because then there's Brahman and there's Shakti. But the point is when you Brahman means the impersonal aspect of the Supreme. So that means there's impersonal aspect of the masculine feature and impersonal aspect of the feminine feature. So Brahman means, because the masculine and feminine can't be separated, they're one. Therefore, both of them exist together. It's just, it's impersonal. It's just the generic quality and the generic forms, you know, and activities. Then there's the manifestation of it through external energy. So then they think that forms are therefore are all connected with illusion. They don't know that there's internal potency that you can connect it with. Does that make sense? Yeah. So then that's the aspect that they don't catch. You know, because they're trying to say, oh, it doesn't have anything. But by saying that there's jivas and there's illusion, then either Brahman is transformed, but then you're saying Brahman is transformable and you've already defined it as not being. So therefore, one line will say that's impossible. But then if it doesn't, then where does the illusion come from? Because you can't explain both. Okay, if you say, yes, the illusions created the jivas, but where'd the illusion come from? And if you say it's come from the jivas, but until the jiva's been covered by illusion, you can't have a jiva. But if the jiva is the cause of the illusion, how does the undifferentiated Brahman, which is not an illusion, create illusion and then cover itself? You know, so then they come up with, they'll say pastime. But then pastime indicates that there's a mind and there's happiness and activities. So in other words, the pastime, then they're getting some benefit through activities, through forms and all that. So then why are they saying the forms are bad? If it's pastimes of Brahman, what's the problem? Then it's all Brahman, and then it's transcendental. Good? because they don't like their position within the pastimes. That's the so, you know, it's unviable, the whole thing. But because the living entity has the attachment to being God, okay, they don't want to necessarily control material energy, though they are. They want to control it by not interacting with it. But you know, control the senses, that's still material energy. Control the mind, that's still material energy. So the whole thing is, it's just a different way, a different kind of experience you want to get from that control. Like the karmi, it's one thing, because there's that sense of possession. While with the jnani, then there's not the sense of possession. But in any case, on both is the sense of lordship. So that's what they're getting from it. So they don't actually want to go, well then, because then if the jiva is eternally separate, the jiva is coming from Brahman, is subordinate to Brahman, that means then we're servants of Brahman. That if we're servants, we're not lords. And then our happiness comes from pleasing Brahman, as opposed to pleasing ourselves. Because the Mayavada, he's just pleasing himself. He's engaged in the activities of karma that will please, because he'll get the Brahmananda. Right? It's not that by him going to back, the Brahman gets more ananda. You know what I'm saying? So it's all about themselves. Now here it's now it's suddenly about someone else. So that's surrender. They don't want to do that. Does that make sense? So you can see underlying why they can't understand. That's just why they don't have the impetus to understand. Then the other is just the facts that you can't gauge something spiritual from something material. Because there's no common element to judge from. Does that make sense? So that's just the bottom line there. But even they'll accept that. They'll say that themselves. But then they'll go on to make up their own philosophy. Yes?
You know, we say in the West there's so many spiritual groups, yoga groups, and we say, oh, we just put them in one category, they're all Mayavada. But to my understanding, it's difficult to understand Mayavada philosophy, so I don't even think they know what they are. I mean, what's your, you know, we say Mayavada, Shunilaya Vaishnavanashi, it will destroy your bhakti. But do you think that people who just get a whiff of it because they're in that scene are actually Mayavadis? They actually understand and they're contaminated deeply?
Well, they're contaminated. Contaminated deeply because it's a matter of karma and jnana has been what they've been doing since time immemorial. That it's just a matter of whether they're conscious of what's happening or not. You know, it's just like, let's say you have the train musician, you have the garage band. Right? You know, it's just, they don't know, they just know that if you do this, you get the sound that they want. But they don't know why. You tell them, you know, oh yeah, well, you know, if you do this and put in the seventh like that and then do all these other things like that, they don't know what you're talking about. You know, so the whole thing is that it's just a matter of that they're functioning within it. So they are atheistic, because the point is also the philosophy is very simple. What is the nature of the supreme? What's the nature of the soul? What's the relationship? So if the supreme is impersonal, and the soul is not a individual spiritual entity. In other words, if the individuality of the soul or the individuality of their worshipable object isn't eternal, then they're Mayavadis. It's just they don't know the science, it's not well thought out, because basically anything that's not Vaishnavism, it's all impersonal. All of it. It's just a matter of which elements of it are there. So the Mayavad takes it to the extreme. They try to actually define it down to its last possible point. But then even within the Mayavada school, you get these different breakdowns. You know, whether it's Vivartavad. But within Vivartavad, is it Parinamavad, which they'll call Vikara? Or is just the Vivarta? Is it just, so is the illusion, because it's an illusion, but is the illusion totally just absolute illusion, means there isn't anything there at all, substance? Or is it that it's substance, it's Brahman come in that form, that Brahman is transformed, and therefore you feel that there's substance, but what you call the substance isn't real? You say it's a nice, you know, important object, but it's just a form of Brahman. So it's not any more special than anyone else. So you're attributing this Brahman is special, that Brahman's not special, that's illusion. So they get down to that, and the reason for that is that if means you can't have an illusion and the jivas unless that potency is coming from somewhere. So therefore, then, that has to come from Brahman, because it's all Brahman. But if you say Brahman's doing that, Brahman is transforming, which is against the rules, so it has to be illusion. So even within the Mayavadis, they'll kill each other. We don't even have to worry about, you know, going into fear. They already have harassed each other. It's only if Vaishnavas come along, then they all get together, you know, like this. But otherwise, then they don't have a good thing to say about each other either. You know, and that's where they get real technical. So all they've tried to do is explain exactly how the jiva and God don't exist. While the other ones, they just, as a basic thing, they know. You ask anyway, it's like, yes, God's there, he's a person by his mercy, and you sure is this and that. And okay, so it's like, he has no form, he has nothing like that. What's your relation to the spiritual world? What do you mean relation? I'm going there with my family. I mean, what has God got to do with it? You know? You know, so there, it's all impersonal. So it may not be specifically Mayavad. Mayavad is a particular group of impersonalists. Because you do have the actual proper Brahmavad, they don't get into that detail. The point is that it's all Brahman. So there can be varieties of Brahman, it doesn't matter. So you can say an actual true Brahmavadi would technically be someone in Shantaras. That's why generally it's not. But occasionally, when if you're dealing in general philosophy, then Shantaras is counted within, you know, strongly within the Vaishnava area. But when you get into analyzing just rasa, then generally the definitions of those in Shantaras, you can't quite tell the difference. Are they describing Vaishnavas or are they describing impersonally Brahmavads? It becomes a little difficult to understand there, because they're only accepting the qualities of God, but technically just the impersonal aspect. They are impressed by the form that it's manifesting through, they're cool with. It's not that God doesn't have God, God has a form. So that's what separates them from, is that they appreciate that aspect. While the Brahmavadi may not, but if the Brahmavadi comes in contact, then they have no problem with it. Like the four Kumaras didn't have an identity crisis when they figured out that, you know, Vishnu is transcendental, you know, is Brahman. You know, they didn't, you know, hey, we got to rethink our lives here. No, it's just, oh, okay, that's the it's a further understanding. So basically their position is a Brahmavadi, but it's Vaishnava by perspective. You know, so the situation. Well, the Vaishnavas situate themselves within rasa. So therefore, the four higher ones are considered rasa, right?
Then the yogis, sometimes they identify with Paramatma, that they are Paramatma, and sometimes they...
So that's the same thing. It's a situated as yogis, now whether they're Vaishnava yogis or impersonalist yogis. That's all. Generally speaking, in the proper yoga thing, he's transcendental, but we merge into his body. So how you say? Basically, you know, it's that Paramatma Sayuja. So it's a slightly different level. But we'll consider it worse, that you know he's a person and still you merge. So, but nowadays it'll be more popular because, like you say, people can't really tell the difference. And so you'll have Mayavad yogis. In other words, the Mayavadis, but using yoga as their system of elevation. Like that. But technically, a yogi should be, means, like in Yasatya Yuga, they would use it for worship of Vishnu, to realize Vishnu. But in other words, you're going to take up devotional service, they'll start taking up devotional service once they're liberated. So then they use the yoga process to get liberated. So the emphasis is there. That you can also use it to get to there and only accept the Brahman aspect. So you just are interested in that relationship with the Lord, not in the personal relationship. So they're kind of in a different class than the Mayavadis, you know. Same, ends up same result, but slightly different.
So what if you just, you're not using it to get the bhakti, but you accept Paramatma as a person and you don't merge, then
it's the same. Then you take up devotional service.
Automatically. You'll naturally go.
And naturally, if you actually have the realization, you'll take up devotional service. Like you see in the Bhagavatam, so many stories of devotees where they... I think that, like the Prajapatis and that, they would sit down and do meditation for 10,000 or 60,000 years. Then they would, you know, get into household life like that. So, you know, once they were realized, then they would take up. So they take up bhakti at that time. That's why in the Gita is explaining that whether you follow the yoga process and then come to bhakti, you know, in other words, use the yoga process to purify yourself, so that then you situate yourself in Shuddha Sattva. You use it to establish yourself in Sattva, in connection with the Lord, bringing yourself to be Shuddha Sattva. Or use the devotional service process directly to bring yourself to that Shuddha Sattva. That the end result's the same. But just as Arjuna pointed out, one is very straightforward and natural, and the other is very, very not natural for the living entity. Very, very difficult. So... but the result's the same. But, you know, there just might be a 36,000-year lag in getting that same position. You know, so, you know, I mean, if you have the time, it's not no problem. You know, you got a spare 1,000 celestial years, you know, just not sure what to do with it, you know, before the next program, hey. Yes.
So Maharaj, when someone is not a pure devotee of Krishna, means he's touched by impersonalism?
Yes, because it means you mean impersonalism or atheism, but see, is that the innocent means they may be atheists, but they don't, it's just they're doing because that's what everybody else does. It's not that they're committed to it. Yes. You know, they don't know that, they don't think about it that much, as Drew was mentioning, they don't think that much. So it's just that's what we're doing. It sounds great. And they're just going along with it. But the element is that they're having an advantage over the other common people, that they're accepting some higher elements, some more subtle, some more metaphysical, something beyond just the gross. So that's useful. And is in that in Krishna consciousness, you just consider that, continue that same process further. Right, so for a karmi to be into these things is useful. For a devotee to get into these things is basically going backwards. You know, so it's like it doesn't mean a devotee may not use yoga for some exercise or stuff like that, but to use it as a philosophy, it's like, you know, been there, done that. You know, it's what will it add? You know what I'm saying? All it is a physical, mechanical thing. Okay, you're more comfortable using your body. Because if we technically get into yoga, it's not classified with jnana. It's classified with karma. So the first six stages are just part of karma yoga. So that's all. It's just that, but it deals directly just focused on the body, as opposed to focusing on using the body in service. It's focused on yourself. So that's why it's you know, when you say karma and jnana, yoga is already included in karma.
Some claim that it calms the mind down and improves japa because one has better concentration.
Okay. But in what situation? What's the situation they can use it, get the mind calm and keep it that way while they chant?
After doing, you know, exercises and running.
And they're on an airplane to Europe. Mm-hmm. And then they're traveling around in their car to, you know, go see, you know, Milan and the Eiffel Tower and, you know, what's left of the Berlin Wall. I mean, we are talking devotees here, right? Yeah, okay. So then where's the yoga happening? So does that mean they're not chanting? All it is yoga as opposed to sitting in the temple room and chanting. Mm-hmm. Or just sitting down from the deities and chanting, or, you know what I'm saying? In other words, it can be useful, but it should be understood it's useful. So because it's useful, therefore fine. But understand it's a technique that is not actually so important, so that you have to use it. Just like, let's say, the person has a bad foot, so he uses a cane. Okay? So, he's now able to walk around, do devotional service. So, great. But is a cane actually standard? It's for someone when there's something wrong. So, in other words, using so technically the yoga system, other than it's good for health or something, you know, it makes it about, then, but to use it as an integral part of the system, you can do it. Right? In Prema Pradeep, it describes there some Babaji who, you know, uses yoga with, but then it's yoga Mr. Bhakti. Understand, it's not Shuddha Bhakti until, because if it's Shuddha Bhakti, do you need to go through a whole thing if you have a taste for the name?
No.
So it's Yoga Misra, you know, which is a form of Karma Misra, but as long as it's used properly, you don't get distracted, it's fine. But don't profess it, don't try to get others into it. That's where that is a problem. Then you're taking, equating it that it's equal to, but it's not. It's a useful, you know, it's like training wheels on a bicycle. If they're useful, great. If it keeps the kid from falling off and cracking their head, great. But actually someone who can ride a bicycle doesn't need them. So someone who can chant doesn't need yoga. Because the point is yoga is about meditating on Krishna. So you just think of the deities, then it's done. Right? And if they want to do pranayama, then why we would use it from the yoga system? Why we wouldn't use it from the pancharatra? The pancharatra system also has pranayama. It's standard. You do three suppressions of the breath, and you know, then go on. That's all that's required. We say yoga does. You don't need all the physical postures. Sit in a bona fide sitting posture, and then do three suppressions of the breath, and you're good to go. You understand? So that they're doing more. That's because of they like the feelings of that. But that's not the devotional service. Like the mind will become peaceful with just three suppressions of the breath. It says, Gita says, that pranayama purifies the mind. So that's all that's required, you know. So in 16, hold 64, out 32.
Yeah.
You know, that's what's mentioned. So if that's right, do it. But don't make a trip out of it. You know, but the point is pranayama is not done in an asans. It's done in asan. You know what I'm saying? So either in the lotus, you know, the half lotus, you know, sukhasan, these other ones is what's used, that they're sitting postures of which pranayama is used. So where do all the other ones come in? So that's only useful if you can't sit in that posture. The whole reason that the yogis do all those asanas is just so they can sit in their you know, lotus position, you know, for 10,000 years without having to, you won't get uncomfortable. Like, can you imagine 10,000 years and you're uncomfortable and your knees hurt and everything like that, and your circulation stops in your foot and goes to sleep? That's why they do the asanas. So the asanas aren't a separate thing. Hatha yoga has made it separate. But it's not. It's the whole purpose is so you can sit in asana. Then in asana, then you can do pranayama. When you do pranayama, then you can pull the mind in. When you pull the mind in, then you can focus. When you can focus, then you can meditate. When you can meditate, then you can put Vishnu there. So all we do is just go directly to Vishnu. Sit down and go directly to Vishnu. And if you find it's disturbed and you can relate to the pranayama, then do it three times. But then there's the thing of that you like that peace that it gives. So is it about the peace to chant or about the peacefulness itself? That's where the misra comes in. But otherwise it's part of the pancharatric system. Right? Once you've got all the paraphernalia and everything and done all the preliminaries, then you do pranayama. Then after that you start the manasapuja. Right? And then after manasapuja then you do the external puja. It's just naturally part of the system. So we don't have a problem with it. We only have a problem when it turns into a trip. You know, of course, conditioning means trip. So it's just a matter of, okay, you know, it can accommodate all the little trips, but it has to be in a certain way that everybody can cooperate together nicely. And someone's not considering my conditioning is better than your conditioning. You know, like that. So it's just a matter of your conditioning is what you have to work with. Their conditioning is what they have to work with. It's not that they have to work with your conditioning. No, you have to work with your conditioning. Is that okay?
Yeah.
In your estimation, is the average Hindu a Mayavad today, the modern world, Mayavad or Brahmavad, or just mixed up, or all three?
It's just they don't really know. They've been associating so much with Mayavadis that they will basically say Mayavad philosophy. You know, so that's why then in Jivadharma it goes through great length to establish what actually is Vaishnava. There's one chapter specifically dedicated to that, but it comes up in another few chapters, defining actually what Vaishnava is. Because otherwise you have in India tons of people who follow the Vaishnava tradition and rituals and everything and worship the deities. Some of them are very, very, you know, the Brahmins will be very exact in it. You know, the rest of the populace, they just do it in however way they like. And so, but the point is, do they consider that form that they're worshiping eternal or not? That's the line. If they do, they're Vaishnavas. If they don't, then they're not. But otherwise, externally, but because they don't really understand, so that's why all those, you know, millions of Hindus, you can go to their house and do a program and kirtan and Krishna Prasad and stories about Krishna, and they're in ecstasy. Because they identify themselves as Vaishnavas. But on the technical platform, they're not. You know? They're like Vaishnav. I think it's called Pratibimba or something like that. It's reflection. Like that, because it looks like, but it's not, because they don't actually consider. Now, Vaishnava Bhasa, where they do consider, but they're not very situated, they're not connected to the Sampradaya or things like that, then that'll be, they have conviction in the Lord as a person and all that, but they just don't know how to go about it. They haven't had proper association, proper direction. So there's that. But generally, most aren't that convinced. If they're the ones that are quoting Gita and this and that and saying so many this and that, you know, if it's not karma yoga they're talking about, but getting the philosophy, they'll be more of a problem. Then you're talking about Mayavadis. But your general populace is just, all they've heard is Mayavad philosophy, so they just think that's what it is. But they're, you know, basically faithful by nature. So that's why it's defined, so you know what's Shuddha Bhakti and what's not. But at the same time, it's not dwelled upon, because you're looking for opportunities. Because technically all souls are Vaishnavas. It's just a matter of what state of consciousness they're in. Is it favorable for them to become take up their natural position, or it's not favorable? So Mayavadi simply means, the soul who should be a devotee, who is at this point in their conditioning, is not favorable. So that's why they're avoided. Is this
what about the Christians?
Same difference. You know, in other words, if they can accommodate that God is a person and eternally, then cool. Then you have something more to work with. But if they're really convinced that no, he's impersonal, less to work with. It's the same thing. Just they have less, because they don't know, because at least the Indians have an idea, understand the soul is there. And they're different from body and the eternal aspect and all that. Well, the Christians, they can't define what's the soul. They have no idea what it is. You know, that means it's a gross body, but then the gross body dies, and they'll switch to it's the subtle body. But then if it's the subtle body, why do you need to bury the gross body? You can burn it and get rid of it. That means save a lot of space, you know, like that. And so then it's the subtle body that goes, you know, but they can't tell the difference. So then it's weaker. But if they're looking and all that, then it's easy to explain, and they may, according to their appreciation and all that, and the association, then they'll understand. You know, but if they're really kind of dogmatic, then it'll be a problem. So then you're just talking about develop love for God and this and that. In other words, the common elements of what you talk on, so that they become more convinced in there and follow what they're doing nicely. Because whatever you're following, then by not following it, you get a reaction. You know what I'm saying? In other words, if the Hell's Angels, they've decided that, you know, initiation is, you know, whatever it is, and then you have your pants on and you don't wash those pants for a year, if you wash those pants, you're breaking the rules. You'll actually get a reaction from you know, Maya will give you even though it's nonsense what you're doing, you're getting a reaction for doing that, but you get an extra reaction for not following the rules that you agreed to follow. Right? So that's the whole point, is that, so unless you move to a higher level, you'll get a reaction for it. So someone's saying, oh, but you're not following your own religion and all this and that, then yes, you'll get a reaction for that, but if you're moving up to a higher one, then you don't get. But if you just give it up and don't follow it, there will be a reaction. So then you get both. So it's just people don't understand. So Vaishnavs, it's a matter of understanding that everyone being Vaishnav, then, because everybody's looking for God, that's all. Certainly these aspects, these are technical aspects that you get into it, then it's discussed in that way. But in general application, you don't focus on that. Because everybody is God conscious. Every living entity is God conscious. It's just that it's not favorable. Like that. That's why Rupa Goswami is talking about being conscious of God and being favorable. So now you mean, in other words, there he means conscious of God. You're conscious that you're conscious of God. While the materialist is conscious of God, but not conscious that he's conscious of God. Yeah. Because anything he's attracted to, the material energy, doesn't have what he's looking for. It's Krishna, you know, his potency in Brahman, the qualities of Brahman that have pervaded it, so they're attracted by Brahman. Right? Because the inferior Brahman has no power to attract the living entity, the jiva. So Maya can only act because she's using that superior potency. So therefore you're attracted by something, but it's not actually the thing that you're attracting. So everybody is actually in that way God conscious. And they're looking for God. But the problem is they don't know that that's what they're doing. So if they're open to that concept that actually what you're looking for is God, then you have a good preaching opportunity. But if they're not, they separate it. No, it's not God, it's just dead matter, and that's what we're attracted to. Then you're not actually dealing with enough piety there. Right? Because it's not by intelligence you understand. That's why sometimes you have a super intelligent person can't understand anything. And standing next to them is just like, a paisano, and they can understand. You know? Like that. So it's just it's they don't have the piety, because intelligence isn't how you understand. It's by God's grace. So you have that faith, you'll understand. Now, if he has a lot of intelligence, then he can get into the fine points very nicely. But it's still by God's grace that you're able to connect that all to him. Does that work? Yes.
All right, so that would be the principle for the medium to work with. Someone is more in the path of being ready.
Yes, that's what you're looking for. So that's, in other words, it's like this. Let us say, I let you into a room. Okay? And the idea is that in this room, it's just full of money. Just tons of money. And let's say I give you 5 minutes. You can go in that, and how much you can carry away, you can have. Okay? Now, there's stacks of $1 bills. Do they still make $2 bills? I don't know. But whatever it is, $1, $5, $10, $100. You know, like that. And they're all over the place, here and there. So you only have 5 minutes. What are you going to pick up? You're going to, you know, if you know it, you're going to go for the $100. You know, are you going to pick up singing of the groups? You know, you're going to just, whatever's the most efficient. So the point is, you have one lifetime. And while you're here, then you're going back to Godhead. And in that process of going back to Godhead, you can help so many others. Who are you going to go for? The ones who have the natural piety for it, or the ones that are totally opposed to it? So that's the whole point, is that you go for what's going to work, and if it doesn't, you leave it. It's not that, oh, you know, you could have this. It's just, no, it's not a matter. It's that they're not ready. Let's say you go into a basket of tomatoes, okay? You know, you have a whole basket of tomatoes, and you're going to cook something now, right? Which tomatoes do you pick?
Red, right?
The red ones, right? You know, it's not a problem. The other ones will be ripe tomorrow or the day after. So it's, if they're not now, you know, the next generation of preachers will preach to them, or the generation after that. So in other words, if you actually want to preach to them, preach to the ones who are receptive, because they'll be the devotees who are going to then preach to them later. You know, so it's more of a, it's not a sentimental, no, but what about, no, you're just wasting your time. Okay. So that's the point. It means if there's a spark there, then you fan it. But if you find there's no spark, or as soon as you get the spark going, they pour water on it, then be pleasant and nice, and then talk to someone else. Because there are people that just want to waste your time, you know, intellectually or emotionally. So, you know, that why waste your time when there's so many people that, you know, say, there's absolutely no one, and you only have someone like this, at least they're willing to talk, then you talk to them. But if you have someone else, then why would you be talking to them? Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the idea. So it's very, the philosophy when I explain is very straightforward, very practical, very logical.
Here when he's using, he opens, moreover, the upadis are empirically real. What does empirically in this context mean?
Whether I think they have any substance to them. Like you can actually perceive it with your senses.
Oh, okay, okay. So
they're not just part.
They're not just part of the man. Sure. Yeah. Means if this rock is actually here.
Yeah.
Or not. Mm-hmm. Okay. So it's just a figment of my imagination, or it's actually a rock that's here.
Yeah.
But then in either case, even if I can perceive the rock, my value in the rock is still an illusion.
Yeah.
Right. That I think it's important for me when the soul has nothing to do with the rock. So in either way, it's still Maya. But it's a matter of whether it's coming from my mind.
Yeah.
Or like that. And it's amazing how I'm seeing this rock and how you're seeing this rock. We can both see the same like color and the same little holes and everything, even though I'm not like connected like that, you know.
Yeah.
You know, unless we're figments of someone else's imagination and they're imagining the rock and they got a good imagination, so they got a good rock. Okay. Okay. So if they're empirically real, then the idea is it'll limit Brahman. Because then Brahman had to become this empirical reality. Mm-hmm. So that's a transformation, so Brahman can't do that. Or if you just say it's an illusion, then the problem is then where did the illusion come from? You know? So then that's it. Okay. Okay, so then Parichedavad is then if Brahman becomes covered, I mean, Parichedavad is if Brahman is limited by taking on these forms, and Pratibimba is it's just reflected.
Yeah, Parichedavad means cut or divided.
Cut, so the jivas, and then the other is just it's reflected.
That's the pot in the sky example.
Oh, okay. Oh, okay. The pot means where you see it in the water.
Yeah.
But what? But the parichedo would be that there's a pot. The pot where you say that makes like if this pot if this is empty and it's full of ether or sky, then this sky here considers itself a jiva.
Yeah.
That would be parichedo.
That would be a divided portion.
Okay, that's parichedo. And if we say no, it's full of water and from the sun you can see reflection.
That's pratibimba. Yeah.
That's pratibimba. So in either case, they always have a pot. So I guess you can't use the...
Or sometimes a bottle of water.
Say that Maya body doesn't have a pot, right? You can't use that one on them. So they have a pot. That's the problem. They're two... Maybe we should call them pot bodies. that also worked a lot. It seems to go hand in hand, at least in the Western concept. It seems to be really working. Okay. Okay. Okay.
Okay, where's the beginning of the sense? Okay. On the other hand, if the upadi is considered an apparent reality, then the jiva and ishwara come into existence because of the limitation, paricheda, or reflection, pratibimba, brahman, are also unreal or non-existent. So that means it says, comes as the father of the jiva, but then that means brahman is in that form, so it's not existent in that form. So if it's non-existent, how does brahman become that? Because it's not that in the first place. Since such limitation or reflection is impossible, right? Because you can't, as we mentioned before, you can't reflect nothing. You know, you can't get space reflected in a mirror, right? Because there's nothing there to reflect. So if Brahman is nothing, how does that reflect in the pot and you see, you know, the sun or the moon? Because it has a form. You can reflect a form. You can't reflect something without a form. So in other words, then that means to be reflected, Brahman would have to have a form, and the jiva would have to have a form. But if you say they have no forms, they can't be reflected. So it's impossible in philosophy. Then their doctrine, which they base on the analogy of an unreal dream state, will not be supported by the pot in the sky example. Right? Because then, if you're saying it's a dream, you can't use the pot example in the sky. Right? You have to use something else, because it's a dream, because the pot example is a fallacious argument. It won't support what you're saying.
Yeah.
Which involves real adjuncts, since no analogy can be drawn between possible and impossible things.
Yeah.
But you can't connect. I guess that's the word adjunct is what we're meaning here, is that the intelligence, which is material, doesn't have an adjunct to spiritual. Like that. That's the technical. Therefore, the theories of separation and reflection are nothing but phantasmagoria, because these cannot explain the different states of existences, such as the phenomenal world, being themselves illusory. Right? So just it can't explain it. It can't work. So, you know, just their philosophy is untenable. It's untenable. But the point is even though it's untenable, they're comfortable with it, because they want to be an illusion that they are the controller and enjoyer. Right? Okay, they're willing to give up that I'm the controller and enjoyer of this material world, because they failed at it. But they're not willing to give up the principle that I'm the controller and enjoyer on the original weakness of heart. Right? The secondary, you know, connected with this world and the senses, they're willing to give up, and not the primary. So that's also that where they get along. That's the primary, primordial sin. So it's the same. Yes.
We see that when we have a desire to become God,
right,
means we have no reason, no logic.
No reason and no logic. It's just we want.
We want.
That's all. You know what I'm saying? God is unlimited. He is the source of energy. We are the smallest spark of energy that there is. Right? Swarup Shakti is the whole cosmic creation. The internal potency aspect of the Swarup Shakti is 3/4 of unlimited. Right? The Maya Shakti aspect of the Swarup Shakti is 1/4 of unlimited. Right, so you have the whole of unlimited, 3/4 of unlimited, and 1/4 of unlimited. Then there's us. We're 1/10,000, the tip of the hair, no matter how you cut it. Right, that's just the way we are. We are limited. We are not getting bigger and bigger. Maya's expanding, internal potency expanding, Shukshat, we're the same. Always will be. So, that's the whole point. It's simply desire. It has no logic. It has nothing. It's just they want. You know, it's like it would be the example of the baby wants the moon. It's impossible, right? Unless, of course, as a baby, you're Hanuman. Then you can have the moon, or you can have the sun, whatever you want. But like that, you know. But the baby wants the moon. It's not possible, right? So since it's not possible,
what does the mother do?
Is there a mirror?
Yeah, it gets something that reflect and then gives them, here, now you have the moon, and then they're happy. So that's the material world. You want to be God, okay, here it is, you know, roll it out, you know. So that, it's an illusion, it's not actually there, you know, in that form, yes.
My body, me personally, pretend to be so intelligent and know so much information and stuff,
yes.
But all this is not about intelligence, it's about just an emotion.
Yes, it's about, it's an intelligently presented emotion. You know, just like, but it's based, you know, has some Shastric element, or at least some, you know, that particular intellectual aspect. But the same thing is also your academics are the same thing. It's based on emotion, you know. But, you know, it was an idea. It means before they didn't have the idea. And then, you know, this guy goes out, sees a bunch of turtles, right? He gets stuck out somewhere in a bunch of turtles, right? Monster turtles. And then he comes up with, oh, you know, we were all, you know, came from a monkey. Why did we come from a monkey? Why not from a turtle? You know, why monkey, you know? You know, it's like, you know.
Same with the trick is about emotion.
It's just emotion. They just want to be connected with Prabhupada. You already are by siksha. No, but the diksha. Well, what does it matter? Who cares? It's not important. You know. This also, which was the upper sampradaya that Rupik thing was?
I think that was the Dharavesh.
Dharavesh? Was that one of the Kartavajas? Wasn't it a group of Kartavajas?
Yeah, that was Aul Chand.
An aspect of the Kartavajas. Where Kartavajas, you make the guru into God,
yeah.
And then because that guru is such a great God, you know, then everybody by Ritwik initiation is connected to him, even though he's dead for 100 years.
Yeah.
It's one of the classic upper sampradayas.
What was his question?
About Ritviks.
Ritviks are emotional?
That it means that it's based on emotion, not logic. So that's the whole thing. If it's not pure Vaishnavism, then it's distracted by the mind. Like that. That's why you'll use intelligence, but within the sphere of the mind. It means what you've accepted and what you identify with, that's where you're going to apply your intelligence. But the point is, you're starting with the mind, you'll end with the mind. You'll use the intelligence in the middle, because that's there. Then people say, that was intelligent. If someone just goes from one emotion to another, then they'll say, that was sentimental. But if you add a little reasoning in between, then they'll say it's intellectual. But it is called intellectual, but that's all it can do. It can only function within the realm of the mind.
Emotion going to be there anyway. It's
yes.
A matter of where you apply it. You
yes.
Apply it on something illusory, or you apply it on the reality.
Yes, that's it. Because the point is we are a person, so that means there are emotions. So the problem is not that there's emotions. The problem is we think we're separate from emotions, or separate from the senses. Like in the psychology class that it was going through, is that Sahotamar is just pulling these verses. Where from different situations, but he was showing it was the same thing because it was a common word, and he was going off the theme of that thread of that word.
Anyonya.
Huh? Anyonya means, you know, when will the mind be separated from the senses, and I won't have to deal with all this, you know, anxiety that comes from the sense gratification. And Krishna's answer in both cases was, that's not even a real question. You know, that's not even a discussion. That's impossible. You know what I'm saying? So, because the mind and the senses can't be separated. So the question is not when will the mind be separated from the senses, it's when, or when will the senses be separated from the sense objects, it's when will we quit seeing the sense objects as for sense gratification and start seeing them for Krishna's satisfaction. That's what you can do. But you can't actually separate the mind, the senses, and the sense objects. That's an impossibility. So it's the same kind of thing. It's that they feel that intellectually I'll understand, or I'll do this and that, but it's all understand. You know, then I'll get the satisfaction and feeling from understanding. So it still goes back to mind.
Yeah.
And technically it's not a problem. It's only because they're saying, no, I'll do this separately. That's why we'll attack it. But otherwise, the emotions, it's fine. That means being a person. You know? That's why sometimes devotees write Prabhupada, oh, he's being so impersonal, you know, he doesn't this and that. Prabhupada says, no, it's not impersonal. It's still personal. It's because he's a person. That's why he's harassing you. You know, he's a person. You're a person. That's why you're getting so harassed. If you were just Brahman, why would he harass you? You know? Anybody harasses the ether? No. You know, so therefore, it's all personal.
Sometimes, I can be under illusion that, you know, to some people it can be actually explained on an intellectual basis, and it can convert them to, you know, toward rationalism or something. But most of the cases, this is not the...
It's not. It means you're using intellect as the medium of expression, but they still have to have that faith. So that generally, that comes by bhakti supriti. In other words, don't feel bad that they didn't catch it. You spent the time. They were associating with the Vaishnava and hearing Vaishnava Siddhanta. That is credit. But they didn't have enough credit for it to turn into faith. So now, maybe if you regularly meet him, then over time, then it develops into faith. Or if not, some other devotee, or in another lifetime. In other words, that time you spent with them is not lost. Right? But they didn't have enough sukriti to actually come to the point of faith. So the person where you just start talking and they go, wow, yeah, they have enough sukriti, they're just on that edge. They just needed, you know, just that little push, and then shraddha develops.
And sukriti
can't
be, you know, connected to or interpreted as a samskara. So
yeah, it's a samskara, it's an impression. So your talking to them is an impression. On the soul. So that's a samskara. But being as it's bhakti, but only bhakti sukriti can develop bhakti. No karma. It's not that, oh, he's very pious and like that, but therefore they'll understand. Oh, he's very intelligent. So this idea is that, no, we have to re-edit the books so that the intelligent class of people can appreciate it. It's got nothing to do with that. Devotees don't come necessarily because they have academic intelligence. And generally, I've seen those who are really well founded in the modern academy. They have the most problem understanding the subtleties of Krishna consciousness. They just absolutely don't have the brain for it. They have brains. I mean, they can make bibliographies. They can do amazing stuff with their brains. They can speculate like anything. Just play with elements without kind of introducing the emotional element. That takes a lot of training to do. But actually, to understand the subtleties of Krishna consciousness, they've used the intelligence in a certain way. You know, just like, let's say, if someone rides a bicycle, it doesn't mean his arms are strong. Or if someone lifts weights, it doesn't mean his legs are strong. Or he lifts weights, and it doesn't mean he can run. And the running guy doesn't mean he can lift weights. It means, in other words, the physical activity, you're learning in a certain way. Does that make sense? You know, so, you know, let's say he can do amazing things on roller skates, you know, but it doesn't mean he can drive a car. You know what I'm saying? Though physically he's, you know, his mind, you know, senses, coordination is very good, this, that, blah, you know. But the point is where they've developed it. So the Mayavadis developed a certain thing, but they're limited because of that. So everybody has that limitation. So it's only by Krishna's grace. So in other words, you're preaching, Lord is pleased, they're trying to understand, the Lord is pleased, they understand. So your understanding is further, their understanding is further. If they don't want to understand, then they won't.
So the mistake of in person is that they rely too much on their intelligence.
They rely too much on their intelligence, and it says here, the intelligence doesn't have an adjunct to spiritual. It's a material element. You know, it's the closest thing to the soul. But the point is since they don't have a soul, right? They're a souls. So they can't understand it. Right? So that's the whole difficulty. You know, so but if they acknowledge the soul, then the intelligence is close. so that that reflection, and because you identify there, then the mind can get something out of it.
One question.
Yeah.
Is it possibly dangerous for devotees to study Mayavada philosophy?
It's totally dangerous.
I mean,
because if you study it like this, this is Jiva Goswami, so it's not dangerous. But if they study it on its own, you know, from Shankara or one of, you know, which is bad, and from one of his followers, that's worse. You know, because Shankaracharya is not a Mayavadi, but he's presenting Mayavada philosophy, Shiva, so he's very expert, right? So he knows how to confuse, right? He's the lord of the mode of ignorance, so mode of ignorance means to confuse. But he doesn't believe in it. So he hasn't in any way written something that's actually technically opposed to Shastra. He's just interpreted Shastra in a way that could allude to this impersonal understanding. But his followers truly, sincerely believe in it. That's why you just absolutely want to stay away from them. Like that. But how it's written, you could make the mistake and take be illusioned by it. Because Shiva is he's big. You know, we're still Shivas, you know, he is Shiva Tattva. So. But like this, no, it shouldn't be if it's studied properly. If it's studied according to the modern academy, I would say that's dangerous. If you study this according to that, yeah. But if you study it according to the tradition of going into it, trying to understand, making the connections, seeing the framework that you're hanging it on, that then shouldn't be.
Study the Sikh system, we got a freakness of that just because we took larger chunks of their writings.
Yeah, yeah.
We could, even in our group, we couldn't see that we needed more Jiva Goswami.
Yeah, yeah. Because, you know.
It's a catalyst for that desire to enjoy and control. And we're struggling as devotees.
But everything's a catalyst. Going home and there's a, you know, a kitchen, that's a catalyst. You see your wife. Your wife's combing her hair. That's a catalyst. You know what I'm saying? Your kid goes, "Daddy, Daddy." It's a catalyst. You know, you come out and go, you know, "Hey, Prabhu, wow, that was a great kirtan." That's a catalyst. You know, sit down in the, you know, in the temple room. You got the mic there. Oh, thousands of devotees around. That's a catalyst. So everything's a catalyst. The point is if it's connected to Krishna, then it's not. It's not connected, then anything's a catalyst. Lord Brahma, it's a catalyst. Then, you know, you don't get better than that in the material world. So it's just a matter of how you go through it. What's the purpose of discussing it? If the purpose of discussing it is to understand what is real and what's not, then it's fine. Yes.
When preaching, do we not discriminate between different types of Mayavadis? For example, those who are very Shastra, philosophical, have a preaching agenda, and those who have just adopted it sentimentally.
Yeah, that's what we're saying, because the ones that are innocent, the innocent, see, the point when we say innocent, innocent and pure devotee don't go together. Innocent means they're contaminated by material consciousness, karma, jnana, or both, but they're open to actual Vaishnava. Because they don't know, they're doing it just because everybody else does it. So the general populace, yeah, even though they may be very distracted or degraded, are generally innocent.
Yeah.
It's the leaders of that what they do, you know, the journalists, the guys that write the books, the guys that, you know, did just made the, you know, his latest, how you say, you know, music video. These are the guys that are more of a problem. Mm-hmm. You know? And even amongst them, not all of them are. Sometimes that's just their conditioning, so that's what they do. If you can convince them, then they'll have, you know, an effect on others. Mm-hmm. The examples weren't too over the top.
There's there's one very well-known writer who got an Indian guru, so his Indian guru is a Paramayavada. All his stuff is Jeremiah was.
Yeah. Yes.
Because that's who he met and that's who he's hearing.
Yeah, yeah. So then, you know, if he has some Sukriti, at some point he'll bump into devotees. The problem is it'll be very hard to remain in the basically non-devotee circle, you know, comfortably if one actually understands the true Vaishnava. One can go and preach there, but one, it's not a natural place to associate like that. So it's quite delicate to be able to balance the two. But it can be done. But it's just...
Some problems that have come up in our society is that there's a kirtan musician who's not a devotee but is favorable, likes to chant the Maha Mantra, and he's forbidden from chanting in the temple on the grounds that it's poison to hear the mantra from, you know, the lips of a Mayavadi. So how do we balance that versus the opportunity to let him chant for the deities, do service, you know, in the temple?
Well, the thing is does he know what we're doing? Are we just another group of guys? Or does he understand where the Hare Krishna is? So
no,
we're into chanting, and so then he wants to come and chant with us.
He understands that the Hare Krishna.
Then it's not a problem. As long as, you know, he doesn't have a, you know, showboat kind of thing. Then we got enough. So we don't need, you know, so we got over the temple here, we got a whole bunch of it, you know. So we don't, but if it's a matter of he would, so then it's like that. It's like probably with Allen Ginsberg, you know, because he picked up chanting Hare Krishna in the 50s. And so then, you know, and you know, and then there was a big, you know, how you say, serious difference because the tune was different. So then that's okay. But if it's just, we're just another group like any other yoga studio, then there's no need for him to be involved. We don't need to invite him to make our... In other words, if he wants to come and sing with us, and since he's going to sing and he's a musician, he'd also like to sing sometimes because he's getting inspired by hearing with us and like that. That's fine. But we shouldn't base a program on, oh, you know, devotees are going to get together and this person's going to come and do kirtan. That we wouldn't do. You know what I'm saying? You're going to have a program. Then, you know, you have Vaishnava kirtan here.
What if this person is contaminated by Mayavada philosophy? Everything else you say is good.
But it means anybody who's not a devotee is contaminated by Mayavada philosophy.
So yeah. The devotees, we had one at a Japa retreat. He came because he's Satchinanda Swami's friend, and he led kirtan at the end. Half the devotees left. They said, I can't hear this.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Is if it's if that's why I'm saying if he's not picking up on ours. So I would say if he came to the temple at one of our programs and did, that's one thing. But going to a retreat, that's the elephant in the water.
Yeah, it was our retreat.
But the retreats, they have a particular flavor. They're done on the format of what he does, not on what we do. Right? Retreat.
No, it was our retreat. It was a job.
I know it's our retreat. But what I'm saying, why are there retreats? In the 70s, do we need a retreat? You understand?
We were retreating every day.
Every moment was retreating. It means, I remember, was it, did you go to India in 74 when all the devotees went?
Oh, 75.
Okay. But you know, boy, but let's say everybody goes from New York, right? So everybody comes there. And so in between programs, you just have groups of devotees sit down to start a bhajan, or sannyasi starts reading from a book. Or it's just like you go to the Ganga, meant going down and listening to scriptures. So you didn't have to do it separately. So that then in that environment, they won't have an effect. But in this other environment, you're actually going into their space and doing our thing in their space rather than his thing in our space. Because in the retreat, you're creating that intensity by the surroundings. So then he's part of the surroundings, so he'll have an effect. But if you're being driven by in our own environment, then that already has the effect. His addition to that can't have much. But at the same time is that, you know, like if that person wants to come to the retreat to get the benefit of the retreat, then that's another thing. So, you know, then you'd see over the days that his kirtan would be a little easier to stomach, right? But if it's a matter of by him coming there that will impress these people, I wouldn't do that at all. That's not how you impress people. I mean, bring a pole dancer, that'll impress people. You know, it's like, you know what I'm saying? You know, why that? Just because it looks kind of the same? You know, okay, then they can't just dance on the pole with some music, they have to sing, you know, but it's called cabaret. They were really big in the 30s, you know, so, you know, it's like, it attracts attention. A lot of people come, high-class people. I mean, it's like the Moulin Rouge. That only the rich people went to Moulin Rouge. Like that. Now, I mean, there's an audience. You know what I'm saying? So the thing is the point is you have to limit what you, how one approaches that. It means there's a limit to, it means it's not that anything can't be used, but you have to know how to use it. You know? Like that. It means, technically, if I know what I'm doing, I could use a, let's say, what do you, you know, you have those plastic, you know, the three-sided things that they use for drawing and measuring.
Oh, yeah.
It's not a T-square.
Triangle,
yeah. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah,
plastic. You know, it's kind of fat, and then the edge gets a little thinner, you know, so you can get an exact line and stuff like that. You could cut up a papaya with one of those. You know what I'm saying? But why would you use that, you know, when you have a knife? You know what I'm saying? So the idea that, oh, they'll be impressed, they'll feel at home. I mean, how often do they go on retreats? Retreats is the standard thing they always are on. No, they're at home. Retreats different for them. So the point is if it's really different and everybody's, you know, wearing bed sheets, you know, it adds to the exoticness, you know. But this idea, no, you have to make it like their home. So it means you've made it like their home? Have you been in their home? Like that, you know. So the point is it's one has to be very, very careful. It can be done, but you have to know exactly what you're doing. In other words, the more technical it gets, the more careful you have to be. You know, if you have a butter knife, you don't have to worry so much. You know, if you have a nice, you know, Japanese sushi knife, then you have to be careful. You know, because it's you can get more damage. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Those listening to that kirtan, what's the effect?
Just that you know when it's your turn to sing. In other words, you get the benefit by when the other devotees are singing. You're not getting benefit from his kirtan. You're getting benefit from your singing and from hearing the other devotees sing. You're getting zero from that guy. But he's getting benefit from hearing you sing. Like that. That's what I'm saying, is if he's favorable to the idea, so he's kind of submissive to the process, then there'll be, you know, the minimal amount of slag.
So he's getting some sukriti.
He's getting sukriti, and the devotees are getting sukriti not from his kirtan, just that he's saying, now he stops, now you know you're supposed to sing, so then now you sing and so. But otherwise, it's what can they have?
Once you're very attached to a particular singer, which is popular now, I read his CD, you know, booklet, and he's saying two things very good happened to me. One is I'm chanting the Hare Krishna mantra, and the other is I'm not a Hare Krishna like everybody. And he's just like, you're just speaking so bad on us. And then I said, wow, I can't hear this guy.
Yeah, so you always have to be. Yeah.
I was the one who came.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So it's like that.
But I thought it was good. Yeah, it was good. I talked to him.
Point is by association, if that actual sincerity is there to actually know something, then over time, over the years, you'll see they'll be influenced, and then they'll be nice. And then they'll start to have effect on the audiences that they're. But now it's that, you know, they won't have that effect. People get involved. They get the advantage of these people doing kirtan in that kirtan circuit is that people are open to the idea of kirtan. Then it means we can go do kirtan. Just like we were saying, is that the Hindus, if they identify themselves as Vaishnavs, then they're open to us coming and doing a devotional program, because they, in kind of principle, relate to it, though in actual detail, don't. So it's the same with these people. That's the whole idea. The process of, in other words, what we're doing, what happens here, is that means not the one we're programming. What we go to programs like that is this is the element that in the Vedic tradition where in the elements of karma, bhakti is written in. Karma can't give bhakti. You know, it's like you do a big yajna, you're not going to get any bhakti from it. But the point is to do a yajna properly, then you have to have brahmins. And then in the intervals between when the rituals are going on, naturally you sit with the brahmins and discuss. So now, if those brahmins happen to be Vaishnavas, you'll hear Vaishnava philosophy. So it's written in. The whole reason that you have to have brahmins to do all that is maybe you'll associate with Vaishnavas, and then maybe in this way you'll hear about transcendence. Same with Gyan, just like Prakashananda Saraswati. Is they're sannyasis, they practice that dharma, so they hang out with sannyasis. Lord Chaitanya was a sannyasi, so they invited him over. That was their opportunity. That's where bhakti is written into Gyan, is that. So then you'll hear something. So in doing that, as they're doing kirtan, not that they're getting really any benefit from all this kirtan that they're doing, but the opportunity is that if we went, that's where they get the benefit. But if people don't like kirtan, then they're not going to hear ours. But if they like kirtan, you know, it's just like if they're vegetarian, then they'll eat our food. You know, if they like kirtan, they'll listen to our kirtan. If they like philosophy, they'll listen to ours. You know, they like spiritual books, they'll take ours. So that's the only advantage of those others doing it. But at the same time, is if they've got more to it, they actually have Mayavad philosophy with it, then you can also contaminate and create all the groups that we're reading about. You know, like that. So it's a fine thing. We can't just, oh no, it's all preaching. You have to be careful. But okay, it's all preaching, but which aspect is the preaching and which aspect is not? You know, it's just like you're taking, you know, we're distributing prasad. Yeah, okay, so, but the prasad's in a pot. So is the pot prasad or is the pot preaching? You know, no. But, so how is it connected to the preaching? It holds the prasad. So if you can't make the connection, then there's a problem. And then also is that, okay, is that the right pot to take out? You know, the dirty, funky, you know, falling apart pot, then are people willing to want to take prasad from it? You know? So therefore, you have to know, you know, what's going on. Oh, don't be fanatic, we're just being practical. Yeah, but then, you know, the general people take, but some of the more cultured, they won't take. You know, have nice pots, everybody will take. Like that. So you have to, that's the reason for going into these details. Because then one can tell. Because, you know, even there it says, good, I'm chanting Hare Krishna, but, you know, also good, I'm not a Hare Krishna. It says, but why is it good? What's wrong with being a Hare Krishna? You know, there's got to be something. You know, at least Hare Krishna is something that was around, is around, and will be around. Now, your particular style of music or whatever you're doing and how you're dressing, whether that's going to be around in a few years, that's another thing. So at least we have a stable identity, you know. Well, you know, we know we'll wake up in the morning. We'll still be Hare Krishna. We won't be out of fact. We don't have to reinvent ourselves. You know, but he'll have to reinvent himself after like 3 years. No. Nope. Michael Jackson, right? He was black. You know, so it just keeps transforming. He has to keep up there like that. But we don't have to bother with that, you know. Our bed sheets are good today, they're good tomorrow. You know, and they'll still call them bed sheets, you know, like that, you know. So it's, hey, you know. I don't know if you were here that one time. One devotee from New York, they were there, 22nd Avenue, they were going up into something, you know, where all the stoops are. And they're going up, there's some guy sitting on the stoop, and they're going in to do a program. And as he walks by, then the guy on the stoop says, "What's with the bed sheets?" Right? And the devotee said, the blankets were dirty. And after that, then the guy was best friends with devotees. So that's it. That's the kind of sukriti required in New York. I said, one-liner sukriti. Yeah, instead of getting all mental and this and that, he just, yeah. And then the guys, you know, okay, these guys are cool. In this way, by basing their ideas on Brahman and avidya alone, their philosophy ends up in a contradiction, right? Because Brahman and avidya are contrary. You can't have Brahman and avidya. And avidya means there's not Brahman. So they, Brahman and avidya, according to their definition, there's no adjunct. There's nothing to connect them. So then how can you discuss them in the same philosophy? So now if Brahman has Shakti, and there's the internal and the external, then you can have Brahman and avidya, and there's no problem at all. Right? So that's the difficulty here, is that because they base it on this, like that. That's why Prabhupada says exclusive oneness. Because of exclusive oneness, they'll always have problem. We accept oneness, but it's part of Brahman, Paramatma, Bhagavan, and of the three, they're all the same. But of that, Bhagavan is the superior. Mm-hmm. Namely, the contradiction, namely that the one undivided Brahman, a pure consciousness, having no contact with avidya, becomes jiva when polluted by contact with avidya. How does that happen? It can't be controlled by avidya, but it does. So then they'll say pastime, but if you say pastime, that has to be a person. You know, sky doesn't have pastime. You know, it's just, it doesn't work. Moreover, the same Brahman is called the personal Ishwar, considered the basis of Maya. Maya being an imposition concocted by the Jiva out of his avidya. So now Maya is concocted by the Jiva in his avidya, but that means he has to be an avidya to concoct avidya. Does that make sense? It doesn't make sense. Yeah. So.
Could you read that again? That last sentence. Could you read it again?
Okay. Moreover, the same Brahman is called the personal Ishwara when considered the basis of Maya. Maya being an imposition concocted by the Jiva out of his avidya. Right. So then you're also taking here is that when you're taking now these Maya bodies when they're worshipping Brahman, because they'll naturally have to worship. Because the point is as long as you're conditioned, you have to have religion. You have to worship. So even the Maya bodies, they still have to worship. So that form that they worship, the Vishwar, so even if he's saying they're taking Vishnu, but in any case, it may be Shiva, it may be any, whatever's their deity. But they have the deity, but that deity is made out of this illusion, and it's concocted by them. But the point is only when they're an illusion. So where does this start? It can't start, you know. But the same Brahman is called Jiva when within the domain of Maya, whereas the Jiva becomes the subject of Maya, of Ishwar. Okay. So now you're talking, Brahman is this, but at the same time as then, but Brahman is Jiva. Right? Because, in other words, Brahman is Jiva when Brahman is an illusion, but Brahman can't be an illusion. So it's just, these few little points here is that it's just impossible to make work. And they've cracked their brains trying to adjust it this way and that way. But all it is they just shift from this to that. You know? When they shift to, you know, to one side, they don't analyze the other side. When they shift to the, you know, but if that side's a problem, then they shift it to the side that's a problem for them and analyze there, then it works for them. But the other side, they can't analyze because you can't analyze both. Yeah, so Brahman becomes the Jiva, and Jiva is then under the illusion. But the problem is then this is the Maya of Ishwar. But Ishwar can't come under illusion? Or why would that, if it's superior being Brahman, why would Ishwar put himself under illusion? You know, thus, avidya is said to exist within the pure consciousness that is Brahman. Avidya is said to give rise to the jiva, and vidya exists in that part of Brahman that is called Ishwara. Right. So now they're dividing up Brahman into that Brahman that is Ishwara, and then that aspect of Brahman that has avidya and therefore has the jivas. Mm-hmm. So now they're even dividing up Brahman. You know, that's the. Which, and this in that part of Brahman that is called Ishwara, which arises from the superimposed upadhi of avidya. Because if there's not avidya, you don't have to have Ishwara Brahman. You can't have avidya Brahman and Ishwara Brahman. It's only because of avidya you say there's Ishwara Brahman. So that means then that's all been created by Maya. So it means it's been created by the jiva. So in other words, this whole Mayavad philosophy is a concoction of the jivas.
Did all these details post Shankaracharya, just what you're saying, his followers are coming up with these theories?
Yeah, these are all the theories.
Not what he presented.
No, that he's using these terms, Paricchedavad, Pratibimba, and then what was the one before?
Vikara
and Vivarta. Means these are where they drive themselves nuts with these terms.
And if it's so illogical, why are there any Mayavadis left?
Because it's just like, why are there still smokers in the world? It's logical. Every smoker knows it'll kill you. But they still smoke. Because they want. So that's the point, is the Mayavadis want to be God. They don't actually want to surrender. So therefore, that's why they, even if they find a fault, they, it's just a matter of, well, if I contemplate it long enough, I've got the intelligence, I'll work it out. So that's why then you have your original point, but then to explain that, see, because he didn't fully explain it, Shankara. He gives all the basic elements, and he'll explain it from here and explain it from there, but it doesn't match together. If I explain it just from this side, it makes sense. If I explain it from that side, it makes sense. But if I try to look at the two together, it doesn't make sense at all. So then his followers, somebody leans towards this, that, then people start to combine in different proportions and like that.
So if you go to some place which is the seat of Mayavadis, and there's just some Mayavad walking on the street, are they like the yogis in the West, that they really don't have a grasp of what they believe? They're just kind of, sounds good, goes along, I get free meals?
If they're a sannyasi, then they've studied it. Or if they're known as, you know, they have some kind of title as a shastri or some kind of thing, they've studied it. They know it very well. So you could use all these terms, and they would, I mean, you would do best to use these terms, but you can do it without. Just like there's that famous discussion of Hansaduta with that big Mayavadi from Sri Lanka. So he's not using the fancy terms. He's just sticking to the logic and the actual points. And so, you know, so I guess once they get over the language element or definitions, but he defeated it. So even you don't know the terms, but you understand these points, then you can defeat them. Whether they'll accept defeat, that's another thing. You know, you're talking about a very pious person in Prakashananda Saraswati. You know, one, that God is coming to his assembly, and two, that hearing, and two, that he asked to hear from him, and three, that he surrenders. Right? You know, so that piety is there. You know, there's something there. Even in Sarvabhauma, so he just took it that, okay, you know, he's a young sannyasi, he's new, and he is the Mayavadi, you know. And so then he figures, you know, since he's a new sannyasi and all that, and he seems to be also taking a little bit more of this sentimental line, but he's manifesting symptoms of a very advanced, you know, spiritualist. So, you know, he's interested. And so then he says, I'll teach you the Vedanta. And so he speaks for 7 days on it. You know? But then he also has the, you know, the training and understanding to see that, okay, now here's a special person. One, he's been able to sit and listen the whole time. You know, he had all those transcendental symptoms. You know, he is a sannyasi. He does have piety, because no one looks as good as Lord Chaitanya and you're not pious, right? So then, you know, but afterwards it doesn't seem that he understands it. So what don't you understand? You know, so, and then he explains it, and then he accepts.
So you're talking qualifications. So you do have the individual qualification. Because now let's say you speak to the Shankaracharya, even if he accepts the Vaishnava philosophy, is he going to give up his position? But he's the seat of one of the, you know, the five main mats, or four plus one. You know, is he going to give that up? Like that. You know, so, you know, we worry that. We went to south. We went to that you know, the plus one mat, which, you know, in its day, it was the biggest, most prominent of all the mats. What had happened is the Sringeri mat, which is considered the main seat, you know, of the four, is kind of like the senior. Forget what was the reason, but they had to shift from there. I think it was, you know, somebody attacked the Buddhists or something. They attacked them or others. Government something, so they had to move from there. So they moved to the Kanchi. And it was there for hundreds of years. And then at some point, everything went back to normal. So then they moved the seat back. But then some kept the seat there. So it's considered that it's not actually a seat. But, you know, recently they had very, very big scholarly, very, very knowledgeable. So then he kind of took prominence like that. So his junior's junior, which at the time would have been like, I don't know, 10, 12 years old, and we had happened to be there because we were in Kanchi, we went through there, and the kid was on the veranda of their ashram, and we were going through, we had Sri Pallad, who was also the same age. You know, tilak, shaved head, and, you know, looking proper and everything. And the kid was very attractive. He wanted, you know, it was one of those, he'd like to come down and talk to him. Hey, another like sadhu kid, like that. But then all the Shankara teachers, you know, they're all like 50, 60 years old. They saw that and they immediately came over and pulled him aside. You know, they just knows, you know, we're bad news for them.
Contaminated by
them. Yeah, you get contaminated. No, he's contaminated by it. Yeah. Okay. Okay. Thus, the ultimate absurdity, Ishwara, who possesses vidya, has source in avidya. Right? So this is the thing. So in other words, we're taking the Mayava, is taking Brahman, dividing it into two. The part that's avidya. Right, because if everything's Brahman, it has to come from there. Because otherwise, if it came from somewhere else, then it's not that. So it has to come from Brahman by their own philosophy. It's like to say, it's all one, it doesn't matter like that. Okay, give me your wallet. It's all one. You're one, I'm one, we're all one, give me your money. You know, devotees have done it many times to these, you know, so-called, you know, college Mayavadis. You know, take their money. And they can't say anything because it's their philosophy and they have to stand true to their philosophy. You know, they get a book out of it, you know. But, does that make sense? So they have to, you know, then they have to stand true to, okay, then it has to be part of Brahman. But then there's that Brahman that is not like that. There's the Brahman that we talk about, and that's the Brahman with vidya. But the point is it's all one. That, but why is there the Brahman with vidya? Because that's an upadhi. It's because of the Brahman with avidya. So that means the Brahman with vidya, or the one that you consider is the real Brahman, is created from, because of the avidya Brahman. So now you're saying your supreme, absolute, pristine Brahman is actually created by avidya. Right? So it's doesn't work very well.
If we put Shakti there, it all works.
Everything works, because it's Shakti Parinamavad. It's not Brahma Parinamavad. And the Vivartavad won't work on its own. Right? So you know, so that's the thing, is then they'll change from, you know, the pot and the ether, you know, and or the pot and the reflection. You know, whether it's separated off or whether it's reflected, it's not actually there, it's in a reflection, it's not really there. Or we've actually caught a part of Brahman and now that's separate. So they try all these different ways of doing, right? So basically it's those four, right? You know, it's separated, the jiva is separated off from Brahman, or he's actually just a reflection. Right?
and that the Brahman itself is transformed into this illusion, so like that, and because it's transferred into the illusion, therefore you have the Ishwara Brahman, right? It's coming from the illusion, and that, or it's just an illusion. There's no transformation, but then where does illusion come from? Then you can't explain that. So basically, these you could say these four tenets are what they take and, you know, mix and match and come up with their particular, you know, brand of Mayavada. So it's like that.
And is there new and improved brands every year?
I'm sure there are, you know. But generally is that you take that, because then that, people can't do that all day, so they'll mix it with some yoga or with some tantra or with some, you know, yajna, or, you know, they'll mix something in so that it keeps people busy. And then the philosophy, just if they have a question, they'll bring it up. And if they don't have it, they don't, then they won't. But, okay. It's amazing. Oh, this is Tattva Sundarbha. That's great.
So when you tell the grandkid that granddaddy died, and he says, where did he go? And you say, he no longer exists, he's merged in Brahman. That's what you tell the little kids. Because Vidyananda was just saying, in Buddhism, that didn't work for them at some point. They couldn't just say he became nothing, so they had to develop this concept of heaven.
Heaven.
You know, just so you could tell the grandkid he went to heaven, because to tell him when he became nothing, it was, didn't work, because the kids down the street were Christians and saying, my granddaddy went to heaven. So,
okay. So
I'm just wondering if this has become a problem in India. Where did he go?
No, because they all accept the Brahman aspect because it's a Vedic thing.
So it's not strange to them. They just merge and.
Yeah. That means to kids it'll always be, because for kids, Vaishnavism. It means for kids, straight Vedic philosophy, culture, all that makes sense to them. It's only as they grow up, then bending upon their backgrounds and that, then they can have a problem with it. But otherwise, for kids, you know, demigods aren't a problem. I had the other day, I was overheard an interesting conversation. Is that, remember, it was like 2 weeks back. It was hot, but there was this fog. Right in the morning?
Mm-hmm.
So, because it was hot, then the boy would hang his gumsha on the line. And, you know, it would get dry. And so in the evening, he would check before he goes, it's dry. But then when he comes in the morning, because of the mist, it's wet. And there was a whole conversation about who was doing that. Was it Indra? Because he's in charge of the clouds and all that, and then the mist is like a low cloud and all that. But at the same time, well, that's outside, but why is it inside? The other kids, no, it's Vayu, because he's blowing the cloud inside. So if Vayu wasn't blowing, then the cloud wouldn't come inside and make it wet. Like that. And I can't remember, there was a third demigod involved, and I can't remember what was that. But there was these little kids. I'm talking about these are the little, you know, 6, 7, 8 year olds or 10 year olds, they're discussing like this. So for them it's very real. The demigods are there, they're real, they're doing all these different things, and so it's not a problem for them. You know, it's just you give them real ones instead of like Santa or something, like Tooth Fairy, you know. So it's
Om Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki.
Jai.
Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki.
Jai.
Jai Jitai Gaura Premanandi. The third demigod was Varuna, because he's in charge of water. So it was a very serious, it went on for some time.
This big discussion.
What was the conclusion?
I don't know. I left. This was all going.